TalkZone.com.
Now, TalkZone presents the Cyber Advisor. This is the show that looks at the people and events that move the financial markets and shape our economy. Here's your host for the Cyber Advisor, David Revelle.
Well, have you seen all those pictures about the G20? To me, it looks like a stylized rock concert. First comes all those motorcycles. Have you ever seen so many? And then come the angry groupies. Now, I understand that many of these miscreants follow these meetings around the world just to protest. And finally, come the stars themselves. The presidents, prime ministers, and heads of state. We're told that they have the feeling that it's a great opportunity to get together and discuss new ideas about the economy. And besides, it's another chance to snub the British. Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to the September 25th edition of the Cyber Advisor. This week, a close look at the G20 meeting. That's the meeting of the heads of the 20 largest economies in the world, along with our rundown of the news and events in the world of investing. I'm your host, Dave Revelle. And if you'd like to join us on the show, our lines are open. You can dial toll-free 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT. Or reach me anytime on my email. It's Dave at thecyberadvisor.com. Well, lots to do this week. First of all, in our first segment, we'll have a review of the week by looking back at the mega merger between Dell Computer and Perot Systems. Michael Dell discusses what the new organization will look like and the changes he sees in his business model. Then we'll hear from Julian Roberts, one of the founders of the hedge fund industry. He's generally pretty bullish on the markets, but today we'll listen to an interview he gave on CNBC as he discusses what he thinks is ahead for investors. In the second segment, we'll begin our in-depth look at the G20 meeting. It began yesterday in Pittsburgh and brings together the leaders of the world's largest economies to discuss the current economic crisis. So far, there's lots of discussions of bankers' compensation, especially by the Europeans, but very little discussion about what we think the real issues of protectionism, bank capital requirements, and financial leverage that need to be addressed. Hopefully, when they get behind those closed doors, these important issues will be discussed. In the third segment, we'll take another look back at the carry trade with UBS analyst Thi-Chin Lo. Now, the carry trade, you remember, is a way that large institutions borrow money in one currency and invest in another. For 20 years, ending last year, hedge funds and other large institutions made handsome profits borrowing from the Japanese banks in Japanese yen at very low interest rates and investing in the U.S. stock market. This is a little known strategy, but it's one of the primary drivers of the bull market in the U.S. and also for those of us who see financial leverage as a primary cause of the bubble in the stock market, this is one of the ways it was done. I wonder if the G20 will discuss carry trade. And finally, Vincent Reinhardt from the American Enterprise Institute will give us an in-depth look at the latest policy statement of the Federal Reserve. There's a lot more here than we first thought, and you may be surprised at just who is not participating in the current economic rebound. Well, things began early on Monday morning when Dell Computer, founder Michael Dell, announced along with Ross Perot Jr. that the two companies would merge. Actually, Dell was taking over Ross Perot Systems. Now, Dell Computer is historically a hardware maker. I have a Dell Computer sitting on my desk right here, as many of you no doubt do. But Perot Systems tends to be a software company. So the question is, what will this merged organization look like? Will it be a traditional merger where two companies come together and about half the staff gets laid off, or what exactly will it look like? Michael Dell, Ross Perot Jr. were interviewed very bright and early Monday morning on CNBC, and here's what they had to say.
It's really fundamentally about growth. Because the capabilities of Perot Systems are really quite different than the ones that exist within Dell, this is a foundational acquisition that creates, you know, a new pillar of growth opportunities for the company. And so, you know, we see much more expansion opportunity, and we're very excited to bring, you know, really a fantastic team of colleagues, you know, into the Dell organization.
One of the things that I think is missing when people analyze a company, especially like a company like Dell Computer, which Michael Dell, after all, began when he was a college student and really kind of bootstrapped from the very beginning, is as organizations get larger and larger, they have to take advantage of any opportunity that they see ahead to continue to grow. It really becomes, in a highly competitive economy like the one we're in, it really becomes grow or get out of the way. And I think Michael Dell has done an excellent job as he's matured and his company has matured in taking advantage of opportunities as they've come along. And in the next part of this interview, you'll hear how Michael Dell kind of takes the interview into this new business model that he foresees going forward. Here's Michael Dell part two.
Joe, if you look at our last quarter, we generated $1.1 billion in cash flow from operations. So, you know, I feel pretty good about the business that we have. Certainly, there's been a pause and slowdown in buying in our sector, but we've really been transforming Dell in a number of ways. And one of the ways that we're doing that is becoming a solutions integrator, providing the best value solutions to help companies run a very efficient enterprise architecture and enterprise solutions. And the addition of the Pro Systems team here will really allow us to extend that to a much broader set of customers, a much broader set of solutions.
Pro Systems has always been a service provider for large institutions, and here's Michael Dell indicating that it is time for the Dell Corporation to step into a more integrated solution for the large institutions. A very interesting move. It'll be fascinating companies come together and fit together in the months and years ahead. I think it was a move that speaks volumes about Michael Dell's confidence in the U.S. economy coming back, that he steps forward at this time. Probably the largest M&A activity that we've seen in a couple of months in the stock market. Well, kind of a mixed week with a bias to the downside. On Monday, truly a mixed day with the Dow Industrials down about 41 points. But NASDAQ was up 5, S&P 500 also on the downside, down about 3.5 points. Tuesday, generally an up day in the markets. The Dow up over 50 points, NASDAQ up over 8 points, and the Standard & Poor's 500 up an even 7 points. Now, on Wednesday, we saw another down day as the Dow continued down 81 points, NASDAQ down 14, and the Standard & Poor's 500 down over 10 points. Wednesday was also the day when the Federal Reserve issued their FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee statement, and in it, which will be going into great depth, but in it, the Federal Reserve says this: their information received through August suggested that the economic activity has picked up following a very severe downturn. Conditions in the financial markets have improved further, and activity in the housing sector has increased. Household spending seems to be stabilizing, that is, it's not falling, but remains constrained by ongoing job losses, sluggish economic growth, lower housing wealth, and tight credit. Tight credit, as we've said before, is going to be a key in trying loosening that tight credit, a key to trying to bring us out of this recession. Businesses, the Fed goes on, businesses are still cutting back on fixed investments and staffing, though at a slower pace. They continued to make progress in bringing inventory stocks into better alignment with sales. That is, inventory liquidation has just about processed through the system, and that's something we've been talking about. Although economic activity is likely to remain weak for a time, the committee anticipates that policy actions to stabilize financial markets and institutions, fiscal and monetary stimulus, and market forces will support a strengthening of economic growth and a gradual return to higher levels of resource utilization in a context of price stability. So essentially they're saying that a role, a strong role for the Federal Reserve will be required going forward here. Please note the phrase, a strengthening of economic growth and an increase in resource utilization. That's a different role, as one of our guests will point out later in the show. That's a different role than the Fed traditionally takes. Fed traditionally is not taking such an active role in resource utilization. That's factory utilization and so on. You may remember that we've pointed out that number several times on the show, where we have pointed out that current factory utilization is below 70%. Now, during the time, the good days, the halcyon days of the economic boom, we were seeing 90% factory utilization. It has declined substantially. And here the Federal Reserve is stepping forward and saying that we need to increase levels of resource utilization that will flow through to increased employment and help the entire markets. Well, Thursday was also a down day in the stock market, the day after the FOMC released their minutes, with the Dow Industrials down about 41 points, NASDAQ was down 23 points, and the Standard & Poor's 500 down about 10 points. Now, one of the most interesting people in the market, one who we haven't seen for quite a while, is Julian Robertson. For those of you who may not be familiar with the name, Julian Robertson was the founder of the Tiger Funds, really the first hedge fund in existence. He grew the Tiger Funds from an $8 million investment, or seed capital rather, in 1980 to a top of $22 billion in the late 1990s. Interesting period of time. You may note historically that the Dow and the markets bottomed out in 1982. And then it was a really straight rocket ride up through about 2000 on a tremendous bull market, the greatest bull market in history. Well, Julian Roberts recently appeared on CNBC, and he was asked what he sees in the months and years ahead. Now, I want you to make a special note of this is a highly bullish individual who took advantage of all the recent rally in the market. He was long several stocks, including Visa and MasterCards, all of which doubled. And now he's taking a step back, and here's what Julian Robertson had to say about looking forward for investors in the months ahead.
I think we're going to have to pay the piper, and I don't know when that is. But I would almost say we are going to pay the piper, and it's when, not if.
Meaning stocks are going to go down?
Well, meaning that interest rates are going to go up, and I would think what would go along with that, if you'd had my kind of interest rate scenario, that would put the brakes on the economy. Earnings would go down like crazy, but... You know, if we have 20% interest rates and 20% inflation, and the market goes up 5%, that's not a really good scenario.
You know, a lot of the money managers speak in this kind of shorthand, and it's kind of it becomes difficult to understand exactly what he's speaking of. But here Julian Roberts is speaking specifically about the stimulus package and the question about how to get an exit strategy by the Federal Reserve. So the problem is that we've adopted so much debt within the system, specifically the stimulus package itself at about 0.7 to 0.9 trillion dollars. The payment of interest on this debt, says Julian Roberts, is going to raise interest rates generally across the board. So when Julian Roberts says we're going to have to pay the piper, what he's specifically speaking about is the higher interest rates that will no doubt come as a result of the increased debt on the part of primarily the federal government, the U.S. Treasury, and so on. So when he throws out a number like 20% interest rate, I'm sure that's a number that is supposed to be shocking, and it is shocking. The last time we had any interest rates approaching that were was the stagflation period in the late 1970s. So when he says that if you have 20% interest rate and you only earn 3%, you're not doing very well, he makes a very cogent case for how important a good exit strategy will be out of the current Fed policy. So he's a very good counterpoint to the FOMC minutes that we just spoke about. Now, one of the things I wanted to bring to your attention is, as we were coming to the mic this afternoon, the G20 has come out with their first pronouncement on what their progress will be. And the Wall Street Journal is now reporting that the group of 20 nations is close to an agreement that would require members to subject their economic policies to a type of, quote, peer review, according to several senior G20 officials, in a shift that would expose the U.S. and China to broad scrutiny of the way they run their economies. So what the G20 is currently proposing, according to the Wall Street Journal, is that on major economic policy on our behalf, the U.S., on China's behalf, and any other of the members in that, first, that policy will be brought before the G20, where they will get some sort of peer review. Quote, it's a reflection of the world today, the official at G20 said. It's basically pulling international cooperation into the 21st century. And that's the question. Is this cooperation, or is this some sort of quasi-regulatory body that now the U.S. Treasury and Federal Reserve will be subject to? According to the Journal, this initiative was pressed by U.S. Senator Barack Obama, but it also satisfied some of the demands from some of the other members, including Brazil, China, India, and large developing countries. This is an absolutely critical thing to watch, and something that we'll have to keep a very careful eye on. It says later on in the article that it will be the enforcement qualities of this that will make it important whether or not there's a capability to enforce that. But to suggest that the Federal Reserve or anyone else is subject to that kind of review is really going a long ways. Timothy Geithner, who's Treasury Secretary, says later on that he doesn't think there's anybody who does not believe this is a necessary shift. I think Europe recognizes it, and he may be right. The question really is, does America recognize it? Is this a step that Americans are prepared to take in making it a more international thing? Going into this meeting, incidentally, most of us on the financial side thought that what would be coming out of it was more of a comment on making some of the international regulation and settlements more transparent. We were especially looking for derivatives in both their settlement and in their pricing and in how they're structured to be a more international, to have a more international flavor to them. So this really is an out of the blue comment apparently pushed by the Secretary of Treasury and also by the President that pushes us more under the umbrella of G20 and creates G20 in a sense that it never really has had before. We really expected to see it impact the Bank of International Settlements and some of the more the back office investment policy. But instead, we're seeing a real step, an assertion by the G20 to come over some of our economic principles, really a dramatic change in the whole G20 structure. Well, that's our recap for the week. It's time for a short break. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back with more right after this.